Hello, this is Mark Shanton welcoming you to Theatre Voice's latest monthly critical roundup, sponsored by Paul Rave Macmillan. In the first part, we looked at a series of revivals of British classics, contemporary and past. Now I'm joined again by regular panellists Matt Wolfe of the International Herald Tribune and Kate Bassett of The Independent on Sunday, joined by Andrzej Lukowski of Time Out as a guest, to look at a series of plays from further afield. Just as we started the last session with a production of The National, we're back there again for this part for Children of the Sun, a new adaptation of Gorky's rarely seen Russian classic. It reunites adapter Andrew Upton of the Sydney Theatre Company with director Howard Davis for their fourth Russian play at The National. Kate, these shows have become a bit of a habit for them, haven't they?
They have. I rather love them as they turn up. I mean, I think it's absolutely fascinating to see these Russian classics that we don't normally get to see and turn up. Well, they turn up very rarely. And I think this is really fascinating. I don't think it's Gorky's best play. I mean, I think Philistines was better.
Which they also did,
I should have said that. And there are various, you know, Summer Folk's wonderful, Enemies is really interesting. And those have all turned up over the years in London Theatre. But this is very intriguing. I mean, it's about an intellectual scientist who's working in a small town and is kind of blind to the brewing trouble of the coming revolution, essentially. While being utterly focused on this idea that the science, the future is going to be brighter scientifically. And it's interesting because there's a cholera epidemic that he's going to be blamed for, essentially. And of course, that links in with Chekhov, who indeed had cholera epidemics to deal with as a doctor. And so there are all sorts of echoes, and it's very intriguing to compare all those plays that we know with Gorky that we know less of. I think my main cavil with this production is Jeffrey Streatfeild is playing the chemistry professor. And if I'm honest, I kept thinking I wish it was Rory Kinnear, because I would possibly have believed that he was a more seriously avid and engaged intellectual. And somehow I feel, slightly surprisingly perhaps, that Howard Davis's production was going for the comedy more than the actual intellectual truth of that family. And I think the set was beautiful by Bonnie Christie. It's this huge room with kind of laboratory things boiling. There's also partly a living room with huge windows. But actually, if you look at the original text, and the stage directions have many more books, many more pictures on the walls of legendary and famous scientists and busts. And so there's this kind of history of intellectual pressure to be a brilliant scientist and to admire brilliant science. And I think that was slightly emptied out. And so you don't quite get the sense of what's driving him.
Rory Kinnear, of course, you mentioned, did one of their previous plays.
Was in Philistines, and so I
and in The White Guard as well.
Yes, he was.
Andrzej.
Yeah, I thought, I did enjoy it. I thought almost being in that lineage with the White Guard was the last one that team all did together that was so good. It didn't quite measure up for me. I possibly thought the opposite to Kate about the humour, and that I thought it actually could have been a bit livelier, maybe. I thought it got bogged down in this sort of slightly sub-Chekhovian thing. That a very large part of the first half in particular that just involved a sort of endless stream of characters wandering through a door, sitting at this table, having a sort of slightly expeditionary chat, and then kind of wandering on again. And it has a very large cast, and I felt it had a very sluggish kind of first half in particular. And then, I mean, you know, the thing I will say is that the last 10 minutes or so are absolutely extraordinary. And, you know, it's a bit of a sort of breaking out of special effects kind of, you know, madness. And I'm not saying, you know, that was the only good thing about it. But, I mean, it does end sort of as sort of shockingly and deliver all those kind of, like, you know, there's always a sort of coup de theatre in those, the plays they did, like, in The White Guard, like when the set suddenly sort of pulls back and you're kind of completely sort of blindsided by it, and, you know, the thing that happens at the end when the mob closes in is extraordinary. So, you know, it ends on a very high note.
It certainly woke the audience up for the matinee I went to. And the Wednesday matinee audience is a slightly sleepy one, shall we say. Were you asleep, Matt?
No, not at all. No, I might have been singed, but I wasn't asleep. No, I actually enjoyed this hugely. I love when The National sort of gets on these particular jags where they just find a period or a playwright or a team who all are pursuing the same thing as Howard Davis and Andrew bankrupt and have done. Least successfully, I think, with The Cherry Orchard, which is interesting because that's the best known play that they've tackled. They've been more successful when the plays have been lesser known. And this is, I love these sorts of Russian plays where all these people parade on. You don't really know who they are, what they're talking about. And you go, you're kind of checking the parade. What is this? Sister, sister-in-law, brother, who, what? And but that's all part of the fun. And then you sort of thread it together very satisfyingly. And what was nice, I thought, about this cast was that this sounds like Demi with faint praise or whatever, but it was interesting to see a National Theatre of Russia with so few big names. Mm. I mean, Justine Mitchell, possibly Jeffrey Streitfelder, maybe the biggest names, but they're probably not known to most playgoers at all, really. But, you know, I thought that was wonderful that the National can do this. They're just trusting the work to sell itself.
A true ensemble. I mean,
because, a true ensemble.
Because it's a play that only the National could do, in fact. With 19 actors, it's kind of extraordinary on a huge set. Nobody else could do it apart from some other playhouse, possibly, if you would not pay your actors.
I'd also just want to say Justine Mitchell is superb actress, and everyone should know Justine Mitchell. And actually, I think Paul Higgins is great in this. And actually, I think he nearly steals the show. He's playing this, he's the town vet, and he's unrequited love for the sister of the main chemistry professor. And it's a really beautiful performance. I mean, it's sort of wry and funny and then quietly distraught, and he's really good. And Maggie McCarthy is very good as the huffing nanny. There's always a good nanny in Russian play.
Next to the Open Air Theatre Regent's Park, which the season opens with a new stage production of To Kill a Mockingbird, based on Harper Lee's 1960 Pulitzer Prize winning novel of the same name. The Open Air's artistic director Timothy Sheeder directs a cast that includes American screen and stage actor Robert Sean Leonard as Atticus Finch, the lawyer hired to defend a black man accused of the rape of a young white woman in 1930s Alabama. Andrzej.
I was all ready to be slightly underwhelmed by this. The Open Air Theatre had a slightly strange summer last year where they did this very dour rep season of sort of post-industrial version of the musical Ragtime and a version of Midsummer Night's Dream set in a car park and sort of. And they do tend to open their seasons in the Timothy Sheeder era with a slightly kind of
high concept,
forced version of a high concept. Prior to that, you know, they tend to open with a sort of forced version of a serious literary classic that you learn in schools. You know, it's like improving, like they did Lord of the Flies and at the Crucible recently. And so I thought this would be in that vein. I absolutely loved it, I have to say. I thought what was really good about this production was that I think. To Kill a Mockingbird is very much a book about childhood told from the perspective of children. It's also, despite all the racial issues and the fact that it brought up the civil rights here as well. And it's also a book a lot of us come to when we're at school as well. And I thought what was really great about Timothy Sheeder's production was that it really realised that and played on that. So it had the adult cast were reading in their English voices bits of battered school books, textbooks of To Kill a Mockingbird. They were filling in as Scout the narrator, there was us, filling in as us, and the ground was like a sort of large, it wasn't quite a blackboard, but they drew drew the town in Alabama that it set in on the ground like a sort of chalk drawing. And the child cast that I saw on press night anyway, it was extremely strong as well. Like, you know, they were really, really good. They really felt like a gang and you really felt you were seeing everything sort of through their eyes. And I thought that made it, you know, really, really work. It was it felt very warm, which was pretty useful on that night.
One of the scouts, in fact, was one of the Olivier winners.
Eleanor Worthington Cox, she was one of the Olivier winning Matildas, although not one I ever saw, and she wasn't the one on press night.
And of course, on press night,
Izzy Lee,
wonderful name. Izzy Lee.
It was also extremely cold on press night. I mean, the open air theatre is always a triumph, I think, of hope over experience. that you always go there. I mean, I haven't been to it yet because I spent in the entire day actually checking the weather forecasts and discovering that it was going to rain almost certainly. And in the end, I just cancelled the tickets and I'm going another night.
It was so cold on press night that my companion, who is a critic but of a different art form, was beginning to wonder whether there weren't health and safety requirements that would have made it too cold for the children to perform, because most of the children, and they finished at 10:35 in the evening, are on this bitterly cold night in shorts and short sleeve shirts, and you just think they're going to turn blue in front of our eyes, and then Timothy Shooter's going to have, you know.
I have to say, I didn't think it was that cold.
I thought it was incredibly cold. You've obviously
could be my Eastern European blood.
More, I was going to say, my Mediterranean blood meets your Eastern European blood. Leaving that aside, it was a real tribute to the production, particularly after the interval, that I ceased to notice the cold. I had also put on a fifth sweater. it really did deliver. I mean, it's just one of those narratives that works. I was slightly irritated by the first half, and it's a little bit that curiousness of the dog in the nighttime thing where you think, oh, just stage the story, don't narrate it. You know, if I want to read the book, I'll read the book. And they just have one person reading the book, and they have dozens of people reading the book, and I didn't go to the theater to listen to a book read at me. But it sort of works for the reasons Andre said very well. And I thought Robert Sean Leonard was wonderful because actually he doesn't try to out Gregory Peck. Gregory Peck, he plays Atticus as somebody rather sad and a little bit wounded, but also very principled. It's a very beautifully understated performance. It's very moving, I think.
He's actually a very interesting actor, isn't he? Because he's sort of, the last 8 years, he's been in-house on American TV. I interviewed him a couple of weeks ago, and I had to confess that I'd never seen House, and he actually said, neither have I, because he's very much more a stage animal. I mean, he's done 12 plays on Broadway, which
well,
is kind
he
of
is
extraordinary.
The great, in my view, of his generation, the great American actor of Stop Bird. I mean, he was fabulous in Arcadia and The Invention of Love.
For which you won a Tony.
He won a Tony, and he was superb in Arcadia's Valentine originally. And I thought, what a great career to, in New York, be able to act Stoppard so brilliantly and then come to London and play Atticus Finch. I mean, isn't that like the ideal career? So.
Finally, we turn from a Pulitzer Prize-winning novel to a Pulitzer Prize-winning play. Eyad Akhtar's Disgraced, set around a dinner party on New York's Upper East Side, is receiving its British premiere at the Bush Theatre. I saw this last night instead of To Kill a Mockingbird, and kind of loved it. I thought it was really bracing. Normally, Pulitzer Prize-winning plays let us down very badly. I think this one actually deserved it. Kate.
Yeah, no, I thought it was very interesting. I mean, for me, it got off to a slightly slow start in terms of its setup. I mean, I would happily never see another dinner party play where the polite conversation goes sour. And then, you know, Yasmina Reza's God of Carnage came to mind. You know, you get seemingly decent liberal middle class people together, and it goes into meltdown. But that said, I think it absolutely pays back once that gets going. So you've got originally Muslim, though no longer a believing Muslim, American guy who's a lawyer. You've got his WASP wife, who's a liberal artist. You've got a Jewish, though not religious, but Jewish American gallery owner, and his African American wife, who's a lawyer as well. So you've got a really complex mix of multiculturalism. And the arguments and the debates are informed and illuminating and eye-opening and increasingly disturbing. And the play, while being rather heavy on ideas at the start, actually is interesting about those ideas and then becomes very visceral and rather shocking. And I think it's really good. And what's totally fascinating is that there's this wave of plays, often at the moment from America, about race and multiculturalism. So there's this, there's Mammoth's Race opening at Hampstead next week, and there's a really, really interesting play called Yellowface by David Henry Hwang at the Park Theatre, which is about the Asian American experience and is really complex and cleverly structured about multiculturalism and prejudice within that on many sides, in many camps. And so it's just, you know, everyone should go and see them all.
It's a sort of zeitgeist moment, isn't it? Although I have to say, I saw The Mammoth on Broadway and it is dreadful.
Oh, is but, it? Well, I haven't seen it yet.
But I'm intrigued to see the David Henry Hwang one, which of course revolves around the whole Jonathan Pryce
really,
casting controversy
really interesting.
In Miss Saigon, where he was supposedly the only person that could open the show there, and of course they couldn't find a Eurasian actor to do it, an Asian actor, a real Asian actor to do it, and then of course everybody who took over the part was Asian.
Strangely, I think it might work better here because we know less about it all.
Yes.
So don't look it up on Wikipedia before you go, just go and watch the play.
Andre, on to Disgraced.
Yeah, I was there last night at the same time as Mark, and yeah, I very much enjoyed it. It kind of it has a kind of slightly wordy, almost flat first 45 minutes, and there are some very peculiar scene changes that seem to go on for far too long, but I think it does there's a kind of air of mounting dread, and then when it all falls apart and Harry Dillon's sort of lawyer character, Amir, he's under a lot of pressure, and it's not just because of his background, it's because of a lot of things about modern living. And I think modern living, you know, in America, in the West, and he says something, you know, dreadful at this dinner party, and then after he says this thing about, you know, 9/11 at a dinner party in New York, then suddenly it's like this sort of Pandora's box has been opened, and everything just, you know, it suddenly suckers you, and you're just in this sort of incredible downward spiral. But yeah, I thought it was a really, really great performance from, it's a good ensemble, but a really good performance from Harry Dillon. I thought there was this, I think the interesting thing about it is, although it pertains to Islam and the West, and you know, it's very pertinent opening just after the business in Woolwich, then I think it's really about how we construct our own identities. And it's interesting, there's a point I thought when he's at the absolute sort of pinnacle of despair, and he's lost his wife and his job, and I think he's poured a lot of himself into these things as his identity, like he's built his whole world around them, especially his job to some extent. And then when they're taken away from him, and it's almost like the Islam of his childhood that he's rejected is almost what he has left as an identity for a moment, which is fascinating. And you know, as somebody who, you know, personally, I've probably had moments like that with my own sort of Eastern European Polish Catholic upbringing. I thought it was a really, really powerful and sort of moving moment. I think there's something more universal about it than just about Islam and the West, although that obviously is a grand theme.
I also think, I wondered afterwards, you know, when we were talking about Passion Play, and about whether the representation of one woman was in fact a rather sort of possibly sexist representation of one woman. I wondered if some Muslim audience members who went might strongly object to the representation of the Muslims on stage in this, because it is negative in some ways. But actually, the more I think about it, the more it's actually a very cleverly balanced and complex and shifting portrait of all those characters. And I think it's very clever like that, actually.
Yeah, it's constantly surprising, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing, is that you, because quite often there's the melodrama of some of the plot turns, but I didn't see any of them coming. I mean, it was kind of really, it kept twisting and turning in a really interesting way.
Yeah.
And I think Nadia Ford, who directed it, did a beautiful job of, I mean, I know you mentioned the cumbersome set changes, but actually I thought that was part of the...
I actually thought those were clever, because I think the scenes that she put long scene changes afterwards are actually strangely abrupt endings.
Yes.
And I think she was trying to counter that.
Yes.
So that you didn't just cut, there was a kind of something happening in between. And there's just a wonderful use of the Bush's kind of concrete and brick set, in that it really does look like a kind of warehouse apartment in New York. And there's this rather ugly ceiling that the original building has at the Bush. And
They used it
brilliantly with the sound effect of a subway.
Yeah.
So it's almost as if they're in a basement apartment that extends under the road, when he's kind of morally sunk, actually. So it's almost like you've been brought down.
Yeah, and there was another amazing touch to the design, was the fact that you entered via a sort of almost like a promenade to, like theatre upstairs often does at the Royal Court, where you actually enter via an entry hall that feels like like there. I thought it was also very striking that the Bush, which has gone off the map a bit over the last year or so, has finally actually secured a major coup to get this.
Yeah, I actually think it should transfer to the National. I think it's worth people seeing in that it is about national issues, and as Andre said, you know, it's actually beyond the narrow issue of what that's like in New York.
Yeah.
It's actually about multicultural societies.
On that note, thank you for the section, Matt, Kate and Andre.